Welcome to Political Point of View on Coast Access Radio 104.7.
Hello listeners, today is another day of A Political Point of View with Graeme Priest, and today's guest is Andy Foster, who is the List MP for New Zealand First. Now Andy, we haven't had an interview before, so maybe we could discuss some of your background. Whereabouts did you spring to life?
Spring to life, you mean where did it all begin?
Where it all began, yep.
Yeah, but I'm born in England. I'm a Kentish boy, but came over to New Zealand when I was a 5-year-old, and been in, essentially in Wellington the whole time since then. We had a brief spell in Whangarei, but Wellington's been home base since I was a wee fella.
Okay, so Kent, that's where all the hops come from, isn't it?
It's very famous for its hops. Yes, very beautiful part of England. The only biggest problem with it is the whacking great motorway and all the connections to Europe go through it.
Oh, right. Okay. So a lot of traffic and not much business through it. So whereabouts were you educated?
You mean in terms of secondary school and university and so on?
Yeah.
So a whole variety of primary schools around, mostly around Wellington, and then secondary school Scots and Wellington College. Managed to do both. University at Vic. So I've been through there, got a couple of degrees, and also a teaching diploma from Canterbury, Christchurch.
Okay, so what sort of degrees did you have?
A degree in arts, which is history and economic history, and a degree in business management.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of family did you grow up in?
Well, so a fairly normal, mum, dad, in this case, three kids. Nothing particularly remarkable, but good solid family.
And what did you do after you finished uni?
I actually did a lot of my uni part time, so sort of mixed part time and full time university. So by the time I'd done 2 degrees, and it took 6 years to do 2 degrees, but I'd also done about 4.5 years of full time work at the same time. So worked in accounting, worked in the money markets, in investment, part of a large portfolio management team, or a team managing a large portfolio, hospitality, as every student did, and then went teaching.
Okay, so where did you teach?
I taught in, first of all, obviously you've got to do your teacher's college period, so there's a few teaching sections around various parts of the country. But I taught in Nayland and Nelson for a couple of years.
Okay,
was secondary school, mostly teaching economics and a little bit of history. Far too much economics, too little history, and far too little outdoor education, is the way I put it.
Yeah, well, that's my old hometown. It's a great place to grow up.
It's a beautiful part of the world, and the attraction of Nelson was very much that, apart from it is a beautiful place with access to a lot of outdoor recreation, all the various different national parks to see, the rivers. For me, that was very, very attractive.
Okay, so what made you decide to go into local body politics?
Well, originally my interest in politics was actually spurred by the Longy Douglas government, and it was really that feeling that a lot of things were being changed many things needed to be changed, no question of that, but there wasn't really a mandate there. They weren't taking the country with them, and I really had this view: you either moaned and complained about it, or you got involved and tried to do something about it. And so I ended up getting involved in central government politics, in the sense of you join the other party. There was only really two parties in those days that were, any likelihood of getting into parliament. So I joined the National Party at the time. For my sins, in Nelson, I think I was the youngest by about 30 or 40 years. I said, "You're the electorate chairman," straight off the bat. I was going, "What on earth am I doing there?" Ended up working after that. Had a couple of years overseas, and then ended up working in the National Party's research unit in Parliament. And from there, they said, "Well, we're looking for people to help run the the local citizens association, and I said, oh yeah, I'd be interested in doing that, and got involved in things locally. I knew there were a few issues that I cared about locally, and then they said, well, you know, we're looking for candidates. I said, I'll put my hand up, and the good people of the Western Suburbs of Wellington said, we'll take you on, and so I got elected first time around.
And you stayed there for a number of years.
Quite a number of years. You know, I ended up doing 30 years in local government. 27 years as a councillor and 3 years as the mayor of Wellington.
So what made you decide to take the step from councillor to mayor?
Well, I mean, I had a couple of cracks at it earlier, but this time it was really the feeling that people weren't happy with where Wellington was at. They weren't happy with the incumbent, and I thought, well, hadn't been actually really thinking about doing it, and I was hearing that from such a wide variety of places that people wanted to change. I thought, well, okay, I'll put my hand up, and I did. I think we ran a good campaign to turn over what was a massive majority. It's very hard for somebody who's not centre left or left to win Wellington, and I managed to just scrape in. Real privilege to be the mayor.
Why do you think Wellington is so strongly left in local body?
Well, it's not just local body, it's central government as well. Wellington is different to anywhere else, but maybe it's probably the combination of being the centre of government, the size of the dominance of the public service, and, you know, university town, very much arts town as well. So for whatever reason, you'd have to ask each individual person as to why their preferences are, what their preferences are, but Wellington has tended to go left, even when the rest of the country has gone right, both at local government and at central government.
For some time, Wellington Council has really not run smoothly, has it?
Most of the time, I'll go back. When I first got elected, we had Citizens and Labor and then a few others. And the pattern over the years had been whoever had the most votes tended to control the council. And this was in the this was under Fran Wild. I came in at the same time as she did, and we made a definite decision to say we don't want that. We want to break down those party alignments. We want to have the situation where everybody is voting on everything, thinking it through for themselves. That sometimes you vote with one person, sometimes you vote against a person, and it would really be on the issues and on the arguments around those issues. That, to me, is the way that local government should run.
Well, it's logical, isn't it?
Yeah, and so we took a deliberate effort. We made a deliberate effort to break that down. Everybody, even the simple thing of everybody moved around seating. We had no fixed seating, so people moved around instead of having, you know, the citizens on one side and Labor on the other side. And that really worked, and it worked. As our citizens team, we met on election night, and then we met about 2 years later, and that was the next meeting that we had, and said, well, look, we're acting as independents, let's be independents. And that's what we became. And I was an independent ever since then as a member of local government, and that's the way I think it should be.
Do you think that national politics has any place in local government?
I think the problem, I said this, I saw this very much as a problem. I said this at two or three election campaigns in a row. I said I don't like seeing a large group of party-aligned people. When you've got two or three, it doesn't really matter that much. But when you've got big blocks, it does. And that's what you're seeing in Wellington. It's what you saw in Wellington in the term when I was mayor, where the majority were red-green. And it was very, very hard to work with that solid block. You've got the same again this time, and you're seeing the division, if anything, is even worse. I think it's really problematic, and it makes poor decision-making too.
It seems that one group in particular is particularly disruptive. Would you comment?
Well, it depends what you call disruptive. I don't know which group you're referring to, so...
Well, let's say it's the... one's kind of green in coloured.
Well, I mean, in the current council, you've got the mayor and a majority of red and green aligned councillors, and so the battle tends to be between them and a minority of independent councillors.
I understand that there's a strong difference of opinion, but it seems to me that council should be operating as a business rather than a political party.
It should certainly be. Councils aren't a business, but they should certainly be operated in a business-like way, and that means you've got to be thinking about delivering value for money. You've got to be thinking about how do you manage projects well, how all the projects fit together, what things are really critical to do and what things are maybe not so important to do, and you know, making good judgments around those. So you are reflecting the values of your community, and the things your community will always be saying, hey, we want this, or we want this, or we don't want that, or we don't want that. So it's not a business, but running it in a business-like way or business-like skills and values are important in the decisions that you make. And if you lose those, it comes at a cost.
Well, it's certainly coming at a cost at the moment. It's a shambles, really, isn't it?
It certainly is coming at a cost. I mean, you're seeing that. You're seeing that in rates. And I know that we had to put the rates up significantly and slightly more than I would have liked to during my term as mayor. But there are some really important infrastructure investments that need to be made. There's some committed projects that you can't uncommit to. But there are other decisions that, you know, the council's going to have to think very carefully about. I don't know what number they're looking at at the moment, but it's not looking particularly pretty, and there's obviously going to need to be some very hard decisions made.
True. Okay, so what made you decide to run for Parliament again?
Well, I guess if I'd still been the mayor, I wouldn't have been running for Parliament. So, the door was open. We had a number of conversations. I'd stood for New Zealand First before in 2017 when I was a councillor, the offer was made, and I said, yeah, I'll do that. The reason for standing for Parliament or for being an MP is the same as the reason to me for being a councillor or a mayor. It's to try and make a difference, to try and bring my skills and experience to try and help make sensible decisions. And to make our country a better place. I think in this term, there's a very, very strong feeling around so many people that the country had lost its way under the previous government, and we've got a lot. We've got a very, very big job to do to put that back together again.
From an outsider point of view, it seemed that there was a heck of a lot of talk and very little do.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. You are seeing more and more things coming out of the woodwork, but I think I think many of us already knew that things were not going well. I mean, you could see it in the statistics, whether it's the crime statistics, you can see it in the cost of living. You can see that we'd spent a lot of money and hadn't got a lot for it over the last few years. And I think, anybody who went into an A&E or was dealing with the hospital system or looked at how the education system's working, it's going, it's not working. It's not working the way we need it to and the way we want it to. So we've got some really big challenges, some really big things which we need to fix as an incoming government.
Now, I realise that as a new MP, you're sort of feeling your way. So where do you think you fit into the structure?
Can you just elaborate on that a little bit more?
Well, have you any particular interest in being on committees or...
Oh, you mean what kind of areas would I want to focus on?
You've obviously got skills in people management and business administration and that sort of thing, and you've had a lot of experience. So where does that best fit into your niche?
I've touched on a lot of things over a period of time, some things in a lot greater detail than others. Obviously those areas around local government, transport infrastructure, the environment, resource management, conservation, are all areas I've spent a lot of time on. Finance is important as well. I've had a lot to do with the international community, both our own ethnic communities, but also with the diplomatic community. So the foreign affairs is something which is of great deal of interest to me as well. I'll help wherever I can. I'm obviously taking interest right across the board. So I've taken a bit of an interest in health at the moment as well.
So what was your decision to stand in Mana, given that there was a particularly strong candidate there for the Labor Party?
Yeah, well, I mean, the reality was that almost wherever one stands, I mean, New Zealand First was not likely to win an electorate seat other than possibly in Northland. And so really we were campaigning for the party vote, and so it wouldn't really have mattered particularly which seat that I chose to go to. I'm a Wellington boy, but that means I've been around the Wellington region for a long time. As a mayor and a councillor, I worked a lot with councils right across our region as well. I have relatives in Mana, and we've had property in Mana and spent a lot of time there as well. The place I live in Wellington Central, but we already had a candidate in Wellington Central. We had a candidate in Rongotai, and I've also got good relationships with some of the candidates who were standing in Ahari, so I didn't really want to stand against them. So Mana was a logical choice.
Okay. So how do you think your MP will do in the by-election that's just about happening?
Oh, look, Casey's a really capable person. Got to know her over the last few weeks, and I think she'll be fantastic in Parliament. Obviously, she's already in Parliament, but then so is Andrew Bailey. So it's not really about either of them winning the seat in terms of them being in Parliament. It would be fantastic if Casey were to win the seat. I think she'd be a great local MP, and I think she will bring some great skills, particularly to a background in policing and law. From a Māori perspective, she'll bring a great deal to the Māori relations. So I think she'd be a fantastic MP if the good people of Port Waikato chose to elect her.
Okay, so how would that change the numbers in Parliament?
Whoever wins, so if Casey were to win, then we would get an extra MP. So we'd get Dave Wilson in, who's our number 9 MP. He's a former CEO, very, very good background in finance as well. I think he'd be a tremendous asset to the party and to the Parliament. So in a sense, getting Casey in as MP for Port Waikato would give us another MP who would, I think, add a lot of value to New Zealand. If Andrew Bailey would have won, then the National Party would get their next person down. I can't remember who that is, but so that it's really the person, the extra MP is actually the next one on the list for either party.
Right. How did you find the induction process?
I can't speak too highly of the parliamentary staff, so the parliamentary services and the Office of the Clerk, but their teams. They put together a three-week induction process. First week was in Parliament. Second week we had a few webinars, so it was relatively quiet. I think most people were able to go back to their home bases, their electorates, and zoom in on those. And the third week was again in Parliament. And they walked us through all kinds of things about, the role of Parliament, the role of an MP, the way in which the opening of Parliament would work, the way in which select committees work. We have practices about oral questions, talked about the written question process, a lot of the administrative things. So they did a really great job of all of those, providing us all some really good information. And also were really supportive and welcoming to all of us as incoming MPs. And it was I think 41 new MPs, so it's a third of the Parliament. So it was also a really good opportunity for us to rub shoulders with each other and start to build relationships across across you know, with our own party colleagues, but also with, you know, across other parties as well.
Yeah, that's a fairly important thing to have, is the relationship with other parties, isn't it?
It's very important, yeah, because, you know, we will need that. We'll be working together. I think one of the points that was made is that there's a lot of, while you often see the fisticuffs in Parliament, and particularly question time and so on, there's a lot of work that has to be done together across party, particularly in the select committee area. I think what I can say is that the 3 weeks between the, which does seem rather a long time, but 3 weeks between the election night and the final results being being declared, you know, with all the special votes, were actually time very well used for the incoming new MPs, and so it was quite good for us, even though for the media and for the country it might seem that nothing was happening in those 3 weeks. It's a really good opportunity for us to, you know, to get to know the ropes a little bit.
It's quite a relief to see a somewhat broader spread of people from other occupations rather than academic politicians.
Look, everybody will come to Parliament with whatever their own background, their own skills are. You know, people have said to me, look, because I come from having all that local government experience and all that, and there was a lot of interaction for me with Parliament, particularly when I was mayor. But I just say, look, you know, that's the background I bring. But everybody who's come into the Parliament will come with a background. They'll come with a life experience and a lot of skills. And, you know, I just hope that people are able to make use of those skills for the betterment of our country.
Well, you do have one advantage, is in that you know your way around Parliament buildings, which, quite frankly...
I know it even better now.
It's a bit of a rabbit warren, isn't it?
It is. I'm an explorer, so I've found even more of the rabbit warren.
It takes a while to find your feet. So what do you think is happening at the moment with the political talks about who does what?
You're talking about the coalition talks?
Yes.
Well, obviously, I mean, at this stage, there's only very little that I can say. Which really is to reflect on what's already publicly known. If I said anything else, it would be out of turn at this point. But I think the talks so far have been progressing well. I think everybody is anxious to get a result as quickly as possible. But at the same time, it's got to be as right as possible. And if you were building an important structure, a house, a building, whatever it might be, you want it done properly rather than fast. Likewise, if you're building a coalition, which, you know, we obviously hope will last for not just for a term, but for more than a term, for 2, 3, 4 terms, to get the country right, then you've got to do that properly.
You're beginning to sound like a politician, Andy.
Well, I was just watching my P's and Q's.
Right. So who's doing the bulk of the negotiating for your side of the argument? It's mainly just Winston on your side, is it?
Mostly Winston and sometimes Shane and Merrick, his chief of staff, who was former MP as well.
Okay. So it's a case of sit and wait.
Oh, look, no, we kept informed as well as time goes on. That's important for us to know what, you know, how things are going, and to, if there's opportunity, to provide any feedback.
Okay, being an MP, how's it going to change your personal life and your family life?
That's to be seen a little bit. I think it's probably a little less for me than it would be for many other people. I mean, first of all, I've obviously had a long experience of being in politics and being in the public eye. I suspect in some ways that it's going to be less in the public eye, at least to start with, than being the mayor of Wellington was, when I was very much in the public eye. And in terms of the hours of work, I used to do 80 to 100 hours a week, every week, as the mayor. I'm used to long hours. In Parliament, you've got times when it's, you know, your sitting days are long days, and then there's other days which are less long, but there's an awful lot of reading to do. But again, that's something which I'm very familiar with. So, you know, we'll see how different it is. I think the other thing is that those of us who are Wellington based, you know, we can go home and sleep in our own beds rather than have to stay in a hotel or a rented apartment or whatever else it might be, and then go home at the weekend.
Okay, what about your family?
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, I get to see that. I probably get to see more of them than you know, many of my colleagues will. But not on those sitting days. Are pretty much going to be docker. So they start relatively early in the morning. You know, maybe 8 o'clock in the morning, and expected to go usually through to about 10 o'clock at night.
Okay, so anything that you really want to get off your chest and talk about?
Oh, look, I think probably the main thing I would say is, look, we have an incredible country, and I just think that for so many of us, it's not where we would like it to be at the moment. It's the job of the incoming government to start the work to start putting those things right that are currently aren't working properly. If the two biggest things, if we can bring people together again, we had the idea of a team of 5 million, which when we went into COVID, which was a great concept, and I think for a while we were like that, but we are now quite divided. And so if we can bring people together more than we are at the moment, that would be a really, really great contribution to make. And the other thing I think is, if our economy has been performing relatively poorly for many, many years, our productivity growth has been poor, and that means that our salaries are lower than they need to be, to keep people here, and our ability to afford the public services that we aspire to is less than we would like it to be. So getting our economy working, our productivity working, so that we can afford the public services we want, and to pay the remuneration that we need to pay to keep our doctors, nurses, police, whoever it might be, in New Zealand, serving our country. That's what we've got to do.
It's a pretty good aspiration. Okay, Andy, we'll catch up with you next month. This has been another session of A Political Point of View with Graham Priest, today's guest, New Zealand First MP Andy Foster. Thank you for listening.
Political Point of View was made with the assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.